This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 19th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 379. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, January 20th is Inauguration Day in the USA, out with Joe Biden, in with Donald Trump, but all signs point to a trade war between neighbors. The former president of the Point Roberts Washington Chamber of Commerce fears Trump tariffs could do more damage to his community than the COVID-19 border restrictions did. My special guest on this edition is Brian Calder. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. January 20th is Inauguration Day in the USA, the swearing in of the 47th President Donald Trump, taking over from Joe Biden. Big question is, what will it mean for Canada? So far, Trump says that he's going to slap 25% tariffs on Canadian goods exported to the U.S. Donald Trump on January 7th.
I love the Canadian people. They're great. But we're spending hundreds of billions a year to protect it. We're spending hundreds of billions a year to take care of Canada. We lose in trade deficits. We're losing mass. We don't need their cars. You know, they make 20% of our cars. We don't need that. I'd rather make them in Detroit. We don't need the cars. We don't need their lumber. We have massive fields of lumber. We don't need their lumber. We have to unrestrict them because stupid people put, you know, restrictions on, but I can do that with an executive order. We don't need anything they have. We don't need their dairy products. We have more than they have. We don't need anything. So why are we losing $200 billion a year and more to protect Canada?
Canadian political leaders are planning to retaliate. BC Premier David Eby on January 16th.
Well, I mean, this is the big puzzle from my perspective about the actions of the Americans. They say that their dominant concern is China. It's the importation of precursor chemicals related to fentanyl, the buildup of military belligerence on the part of that country, as well as the dumping of products into the United States. I mean, what better ally is there to the United States in establishing critical mineral chains that are independent of China than Canada? What better partner is there to ensure that we're working closely and ensuring the energy is there around artificial intelligence, as well as any other priorities of the United States, than Canada? We're the number one energy exporter to the United States from British Columbia alone. Electricity, petroleum products help fuel the United States. And so it's bizarre to me that we're having this conversation. It is solely to the benefit of China that the United States and Canada are feuding. And so if we can help deliver that message to the president-elect, to the Republicans, then I think we'll be able to really reinforce how we're actually allies in this challenging global environment that we live in.
Now it looks like we might even have a trade war on our hands. And one place that could be hurt badly is Point Roberts, Washington. It's connected to Tsawwassen, British Columbia. Population of about 1,300 people year-round. The only way to get there by land is actually through Tsawwassen, through Canada to get there. It's less than 5 square miles or less than 13 square kilometers, surrounded on water on three sides. It's a beautiful place to visit. One of my favorite places to visit for a day trip or even for a weekend. You can go camping there as well. And smart people bought real estate years ago and cabins and cottages. And it's a great place to go, even if you just need to go get some gas and fill up your car or even watch a football game at Kaniski's Reef, the great pub there that is along the water. And joining me to talk about what is next for Point Roberts is Brian Calder, the immediate past president of the Point Roberts Chamber of Commerce. He's a former Vancouver City Councillor, dual Canadian and American citizen. We've had Brian on the podcast before during the pandemic when the border was mostly closed and the future of Point Roberts was at stake. Now, Brian, what is the mood in Point Roberts with the new old president coming back? And the tariffs that he's bringing with him, he's even talking about starting up a new bureaucracy, the External Revenue Service, to collect those tariffs. What will this do to Point Roberts?
Well, Bob, as you pointed out, we had a lockdown March 2020 for 20 months, and it devastated the economy of Point Roberts, which to this day has never recovered. We're trying hard, but we're finding that while all of the politicians in both sides of the border, every one of them has said, "Yes, we agree, Point Roberts is unique." Well, if you look up the word unique, it means one of a kind. And one of a kind out of 400 million, give or take, on the US side and 40 million on the Canadian side, that's pretty unique, all right. 440 million not to one. And so, with this uniqueness, one would think that an intelligent mind would say, you know what? They need a unique solution, which is in fact the case. Are they providing one? Not one iota. It's strictly a military mindset at the border that says one size fits all, and it does not. And the evidence is painfully evident here on the road. I mean, there's just no traffic. Most of our economic activity now is limited to parcel posts, gas prices, depending on what they are and what the exchange rate is. And so, but we do get a lot of gas travel, and but it's only 15 minutes, and they don't spend that much. We're down since COVID, when we were down to like nobody coming through, we weren't allowed. But after it opened 20 months later, we were down 40, 35 to 40%. We're still down 25 to 30%. Well, when you think of what that actual number is, it's about monthly. Consistently, monthly, it's about 30,000 people or individuals coming to the border per month. If everyone spent $10, that's $300,000. If they spend 20, it's obviously 600. 30, it's close to $1 million a month hitting our market. So now, when you see what the president elect is proposing, a 25% tax on us. That'll be absolutely bring us to a standstill, just like the border was closed, at least economically, like the border 20-month closure on top of never ever recovering since then. And no one is giving up any thought to it, no forethought, no anticipation. Some of the premiers are doing that now, and I think your premier of BC, Eby, has said, he's part of the thought process that says we'll have to retaliate if that in fact comes to into effect. And he has indicated that it might be in the areas of wood products, lumber, electricity and energy and water. And Point Roberts is served, as you know, from previous discussions and having been here, that we are served by Canadian Water out of the Greater Vancouver District, Metro Vancouver. That's where all of our potable water comes from. We are served with BC Hydro selling their electrical power to Puget Power here in Bellingham, and then they broker it through the border. So if they ever shut those two off, it's lights out, obviously, literally. And the US border, in my opinion, would not be able to function because they're even hooked up not just to water and power, electrical power, but also to the septic sewer system. They don't have a septic. The rest of us in Point Roberts do have septic systems. They have into the Metro Vancouver sewer system and BC natural gas. So if all of those were shut down, God forbid, they'd be basically not able to function.
Yeah, you're looking at higher utility bills and possibly no utilities at all. This is a terrible scenario. Now, during the pandemic, you were able through getting on podcasts, getting on TV and radio to get the attention of the policymakers on the Canadian side of the border. Back then, it was Premier John Horgan, and on the U.S. side of the border in Washington State, it was Jay Inslee, the governor, who is now retiring. Bob Ferguson is taking over from him as governor. But Jay Inslee did take a trip to Point Roberts, take a tour, spend some time there and met people in Point Roberts to learn about the situation, the hardships that were going on to businesses and residents because of the pandemic. Have you had any luck so far with the governor-elect and other politicians?
No, not yet. But again, he's in fairness, Ferguson hasn't taken office. Although I even went after him when he was Attorney General to try and get some help for Point Roberts. But to Jay Inslee's credit, he did. The minute he got out of here, he was here for 6 hours. We toured him around, and he was dumbstruck. I mean, he was literally mouth dropped and said, "Holy smoke, we had no idea!" And immediately, he wrote to President Biden and said, "You've got to do something for Point Roberts and that border situation. They need it to be opened up. And please get hold of Trudeau, Prime Minister Trudeau." And nothing happened. So we contacted Trudeau direct, his office directly, and he had a his what's the name? Anyhow, the person in Seattle who represents Canada for Canadians is a Vancouver and Mia Yen, and she came. She actually came here first time in history as the emissary for the federal government of Canada. And within 4 weeks, we got the requirement for testing. Because Canadians coming down to look at their cabin, for example, 70% of the homes, as you know, Bob, are Canadians, and 70% of our property, even the marina and the golf course, are Canadian-owned Asian investors. They're Canadian, not American. So 70% of the tax base is given over by Canadian money to run Point Roberts. And Mia Yen came here and saw it, and she said, "I can only be 2 hours." I said, "I don't care if it's 15 minutes." I mean, and well, after 2 hours of touring her around and meeting people, community leaders here, she said, No, it's okay. I'll stay another half hour." So I said, "Well, I promised to get you out, and I live up to my word." And she said, "Appreciate it, but I'm fine." So half an hour later, I did the same thing. Half an hour later, I did the same thing. Half 6 hours later, she finally said, "Okay, I got the message." And she made no copious notes. And within 3 or 4 weeks, we had that requirement for Canadians to be tested going back out removed, because they showed they were vaccinated coming in. So why would they have to test having been here half an hour, maybe an hour, maybe a day, to be tested? And that killed them of being allowed to come in, because that takes us 3 days being in Point Roberts to test them. What you have to do is go to the fire hall when they're open. They'll take your sample. That night they'll drive it down to the testing station in Bellingham, and through two borders and all the time it takes. Then the testing station will do it within 24 hours and tell you it's ready. Then the fire department drives back down, picks it all up, and comes back. So it's at least a 3 day journey. Well, if someone's coming to check their plumbing or the roof for leaking in December in Point Roberts, they're not going to spend 3 days out of work to do that process, and it didn't accomplish anything. It didn't save anyone from getting COVID or whatever. So to the credit of the Canadian federal government, who doesn't run Point Roberts, obviously, they did do something, and that visit from Mia Yen, Consul General, had positive results, and it never happened before. So to that extent, yes, we've had some help and appreciate it.
You've got the experience once that you can always dust off that playbook and make it happen again, because the opportunities for Point Roberts to actually help Canada, I'm thinking of the FIFA World Cup is coming up, and there aren't enough hotel rooms in Vancouver, and there's limits on Airbnb, and maybe that Point Roberts could be a place for people to find accommodation who come to British Columbia with tickets to World Cup matches, stay overnight in Point Roberts.
Absolutely right. And we'd love to offer Point Roberts up for that, even with trailers. We have trailer parks where they could park, if they had their own, if they're coming from, say, Seattle or whatever, close by enough, and we can put them up here and they can commute in easily. But we've got people who live here that commute to Richmond and to Surrey to work and then come back here, dual citizens, of course. But half of us are dual citizens in Point Roberts, and we're no threat to anybody. That's the other thing. I mean, we're only 1,200 people year round. And where are you going to go? Even a dumb crook isn't going to come and bring something to Point Roberts and expect to get it to Seattle or Texas. I mean, they'll walk through the farmer's field in Chilliwack before they'll do that.
But what is the mood in Point Roberts among those in Point Roberts who voted for Trump back in November against Kamala Harris? How are they feeling now? Are they kind of regretting that vote because of the tariff issue?
Well, obviously, it varies. People are people. And our problem here for us economically as well is that I would best guesstimate over 60% of us are old guys like me. And they're over, certainly over 60, some probably 60% are over 50. So that mentality is more, well, I've kind of got mine. I'm okay. We've got people here say, don't let anyone else in. Leave it the way it is. I like the green and I'm okay, Jack. But then, and they don't support Dollars for Scholars or the kids. So we don't have a great number of families with children because it's very inconvenient. They got to get on the bus and go to Blaine every day and back to international borders. And if they don't make the bus on the way back that afternoon, the parents have to go and pick them up in Blaine, and it's tough for them. And so that's why I do Dollars for Scholars, is I want to get the kids a chance to get an education, get out of here. Now, if they get an education, they can come back and they're going to work remotely or whatever. Good, great, wonderful. But at least they're not stuck here, not getting a proper education at and 40 years old, still working at a gas station or a service job when their capacity or capabilities are far exceed that once they're get the benefit of an education. So we need some backfilling there. But as far as the Trump issue, we've still got some that are just ironclad, mentality is they don't seem to worry about facts too much. And we've got some that regret their vote. Some will be saying, and I've had this personally, oh no, he's just bluffing. He's a blowhard and he blabs off and he doesn't mean it. He'll forget it next tomorrow. And these are his supporters, right? I've had three of them. And so it'll never happen. Don't I? I'm blowing it off. And I say, oh, you're the same people that said in February of 2020, oh, they'll never close the border. They've never done it. Only one day it was closed in 200 years, and that was 9/11. It was opened the next day, and once they figured out what was going on. So it'll never happen. I said, you're the same people that said that border will never close. What happened 20 months later? Oh, well, that's different. I said, yeah, it's always different. But the net effect can be the same at the end of the tunnel, which is the economy is gone. And so they were in the construction business. And I said, your business, once that 25, if that 25% comes in, is devastated. There won't be any house building here. I mean, you've already got 30 to 35 cents on the dollar. All your building materials come through Canada, not the USA, from Surrey and Northern Building Supplies and Dick's Lumber and those places. And so if you add 25% to the package, roofing, all the concrete, everything above the dirt, you're talking a $300,000 home now becomes $375,000. And more difficult to get materials because now you have to import it from Bellingham or Seattle through two borders and blah, 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 and trucking and all the rest of it's double. I said, you're going to have a certain amount of people, because they're Canadians that are buying and building, are going to say, no, I can't handle that. You add $75,000 to my $300,000 home just for a tax going to the US government. No, I'm not building. So it's in your best interest to be proactive. So, in that regard, and because I'm a proactive kind of guy, Even though I have no dog in the fight except for Point Roberts, I care about Point Roberts, but I'm not a contractor, a builder, or whatever. So it's not affecting my income directly. But I've said to the Canadian, there's a website, or not a website, a Facebook called something like the Canadian Property Owners of Point Roberts. And it's got 1,100 members. They're all Point Roberts owners, property owners, and shows the influence of them to Point Roberts as far as real estate goes. And I've suggested to them that they should mount a campaign to contact their premier, Eby, and ask for an exemption for Point Roberts. It'd be a grain of sand on the beach of life as far as revenue went to the US coffers or even the Canadian ones. And so it'd be insignificant to them, absolutely monumental to us. And so I'm saying, because 75% of this property is owned by Canadians, and 90% of our economy is driven by Canadians, that they ask their premier to help them out. And so I don't know where that's going, because I just started it and I sent them the note, to suggest it on their, that they post it on their Facebook and see if they can organize a campaign to speak to their premier.
Now, with Donald Trump becoming president again, he's someone who made his money in the real estate industry, and he's already talking about a big land deal. Buying Greenland, whether he's serious or not, that would be a very expensive proposition. Point Roberts is tiny by comparison, and would be a lot more economical. Could you ever foresee Point Roberts being for sale?
Okay, Bob, I've had that discussion when John Leasow was advocating that US buy, or sorry, Canada buy US and Point Roberts. And he said a figure of 5 billion. Well, number one, the fundamental one to me is the United States has never sold a piece of property ever in its history, not one square foot. They've taken, they've purchased, they've stolen through wars and whatever, maybe, but they've never ever sold a piece of dirt. And so, if that holds through for the next 200 years, there's not going to be anything done with Point Roberts in that regard. So, okay, if they did decide to sell it, what's it worth? A dollar, not 5 billion, $1. Because you're not buying assets, you're buying liabilities. You don't have big office buildings that are bringing you revenue. You don't have anything that the county owns, the state owns here, except roads cost money, parks cost money, schools cost money, and a refuse dump costs money. Where are the assets? So why would an investor put their money in here unless only if they could get control of the zoning and zone it for high rises? God forbid, that won't happen either, because no one here would stand for that. It's neither of those scenarios are going to come to pass, in my opinion. The best I think we could hope for, and the one I would support, is take the example of the Peace Arch. Whereas there's a zone between the US and the Canadian customs offices of half a mile or whatever it is, and the acreage in there is a no man's land for Canadians and Americans to co-mingle. Not foreigners to come, they have to go through one of the borders. But North Americans, US or Canadian, can go into that, walk freely from their own country into that zone up to the other border station. So if you took that concept and moved the US border from here, where you've been here, you've seen it and gone through it, and move it down to the marina, which you've also been to, and put the US border at the marina. So everything in between is the commingle area. And if you come from Canada and come in and get on your boat, which most of those boats are Canadian boats, and you go out into the San Juans or whatever, as soon as you get to that marina, you go into that office before you cross off into the ocean, into the San Juans. So up until then, you're fine. Conversely, anyone else coming in can bring their boat in and get off the boat and participate in the activities at Point Roberts and walk right up to the Canadian border, but not cross it. If they cross it, they have to comply with going to the other country. And to me, that should work.
Finally, you told us about the history of Governor Inslee coming for 6 hours to Point Roberts, the Consul General for Canada stationed in Seattle coming to Point Roberts for 6 hours. Hypothetically, if you could invite Donald Trump to come for 6 hours, although he might send his sons instead, what would you do for 6 hours with Donald Trump in Point Roberts? Where would you go? What would you tell him? What would you hope that he would take away from Point Roberts?
I would start in the Peace Arch, as we mentioned before, and I would show him the arch, give him the history of it, and look at the three dissertations on it, Children of a Common Mother, Together in Unity, and see if that message would sink in. Then drive him across and drive him through the 24 hours and get him to the clear of the point port here. And then say, okay, our children have to go through that every day. Why? That's a hardship on a humanitarian basis. Similarly, we don't have a hospital, and we should have the allowance to be able to create synergies, I guess is the word, between our medical and Delta Hospital, and be able to access. Instead of when we have an emergency, either having to fly the person out of here by helicopter to Bellingham or put them in our ambulance and go through the two borders and drive the 50 miles down to Bellingham. There should be a more human, a humanistic way of dealing with that. And there is, but that the sort of the human side of things to try and explain that to him and say, what threat? Here's our foreshore. There's the 49th parallel. We just came through that. Now, around this five, as you pointed out earlier, 5 square miles, there's 7 miles of foreshore. 7 miles of foreshore and 12 miles over to Blaine and 14 to Bellingham, it's 15 to Bellingham. So what threat are we to Homeland Security? Let's do a threat assessment study. They always talk about Laredo or whatever, and I get it down there, and maybe even Toronto or whatever. But here, do a threat assessment. Your sort of military mindset people are always talking about a threat assessment. Okay, I'll give it to you for free. Zero. Nothing. We're a threat to nobody. And we're better at governing. Because of our older people are nosy and they're watching anyone that does something different on their routine. So the Walkers Club and all the other people walking their dogs and so forth. If any other person comes in here, we're actually down to about 900 now. They're turned into the police. We only have one officer here, and the border, they're turned in like within minutes. So we do a better job of policing ourselves than Homeland Security or anyone else. So you start pointing out these things which no one else in government pays attention to. Try and get it to sink in, but we're so small, like with our own governance in Bellingham, where we're operated out of. We're operated from Bellingham. There's no one here, a police officer. And post office. No other, there's no workers here, there's nothing. They send them over as necessary. And we know more about Point Roberts here than our governance does, literally. I mean, if you ask them how many septics we have, how many water connections, how many, they don't know. We do. I know every one of them because we live here, and as you've pointed out, it's only 5 square miles. So those are the kinds of things I'd try and make them aware of, and then say, now do something. It's simple. We're only 1,000 people, but they don't do anything. Well, and I guess part of the problem is there's not that many voters. There's, 800, and they can probably look out their window of their house and see more than that in their own subdivision, looking out the window of their kitchen and go, there's more voters here, and I just have to walk down the street. Otherwise, I'm going to go 50 miles and two borders and later.
Yeah, one another piece of trivia that Point Roberts is also about three times bigger, three times the size of Stanley Park. So thanks for joining me on the podcast. Brian Calder, the immediate past president of the Point Roberts Chamber of Commerce, former Vancouver City Councillor and a dual citizen.
Thank you for your continued support, Bob. It's much appreciated.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan companies could benefit from U.S. ban on Chinese vehicles. U.S. prepares to ban import of Chinese-made automotive software and hardware. The notice of proposed rulemaking stipulates the U.S. will prohibit importing or selling internet-connected vehicle systems designed, developed, manufactured, or supplied by entities linked to China or Russia. This includes vehicle connectivity systems with Bluetooth, satellite, and wireless capabilities, as well as autonomous driving systems requiring minimal or no human intervention. In the press telegram, these are landmarks and businesses destroyed by Eaton Palisades fires in LA County. A bunny museum, a golf course, restaurants, a Jewish temple, and more are among the blaze's casualties. Five schools in Altadena were substantially damaged in the Eaton fire. Altadena Senior Center, the Zane Gray Estate. Officials estimate nearly 10,000 buildings have been destroyed. In the Korea Herald, presidential lawyers challenge validity of Yoon's arrest, request court review. Impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol stayed silent during the 10 hours and 40 minutes of interrogation on January 15th. He did not talk when asked about his name, address, and occupation, even to say he is refusing to testify, and refused to have corruption investigators videotape the session. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Willamette Week, Portland schools to donate 2,000 air purifiers to Los Angeles. That's a stark change from a few years ago, when a May 2022 investigation by the Oregonian revealed that about 500 or 25% of the district's elementary and middle school classrooms did not meet minimum targets for indoor airflow. Backlash from concerned parents culminated in the Oregon Health Authority giving the district 3,500 portable air purifiers in May 2023. In Crosscut, former Washington AG Bob Ferguson sworn in as the state's 24th governor. Republican legislators said they were pleasantly surprised by his inaugural speech, delivered in the Capitol Dome chamber on January 15th in State Capitol Olympia. Ferguson took over from former Washington Governor Jay Inslee, one of only three governors in the state's history to have served three terms. In his speech, Ferguson noted the expected $12 billion state budget shortfall expected over the next 4 years. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Carney and Clark, together and apart again. And sod, sand, lawnmowers and lights, Pavco's World Cup spending spree. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and introducing bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to David Lynch, a true multimedia visionary. He died last week at age 78. I know a damn fine cup of coffee and a slice of cherry pie were more his style, and he famously said, "Keep your eye on the donut, not the hole," but I'm dedicating this virtual Nanaimo bar in his memory. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 19th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 19th of January in 1981, Iran agreed to release 52 Americans held hostage, almost a year after Canadian Ambassador Ken Taylor famously smuggled a six-pack of Americans out of Iran? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.